Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ojeremo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Sign of the Times. I am your host, Queen Tahira, straight out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Sign of the Times is brought to you by our sponsors, Manhood Raising Culture, headed up by Dr. James Jones. You can find Dr. Jones on Facebook as James Jones, as well as a like and group page for Manhood Raising Culture, and on the World Wide Web at manhoodraiseculture.com. Also, we're sponsored by the People's Platform for Equality and Justice. Look us up on Facebook as well, and please sign our petition to restore the power back to the people, that is on change.org. and more information about that will be coming soon. So as we reestablish ourselves with our listening audience that is worldwide in 11 different countries, and we're quite proud of that, and we appreciate that very much. We're going to start off with a few listen and learn sessions. Tonight, we're going to listen to Brother Kwame Ture speak about the difference between organizing and mobilizing and using several tangible, people-driven examples and, you know, institutional-driven examples of the differences between mobilizing and organizing and the steps that need to be taken so that we don't continue to make the same mistakes in our past. I do not have the actual date for this lecture, but you'll be able to tell by some of the people that he mentions and the organizations as well, you know, time period had to be late 70s, early 80s. So please enjoy this listen and learn session. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions on programming for Sign of the Times, please reach out to me at Queen Tahira on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/New Power Radio Network. And again, on social media as New Power Radio Network, the People's Platform for Equality and Justice, and of course, myself as Queen Tahira and Sign of the Times. So enjoy tonight's listen and learn session, and we'll be following up with you all soon, so be looking for us. All right. Salute.
Thank you, Brother Zaid. Sister Imani backed out to me, but Brother Kwame wants to know, Sister Imani came to me very quietly and said, there's no chairman in the party, there's collective leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So I stand here very humbly in the presence of the sisters to say, collective leadership. Now that I've corrected that, I know you're waiting for the brother, but if I don't do this, Zaid will get me. In Greenwood, Mississippi, in 1966, this brother said, black power, and what happened? Are we going to say it? What is it? This is embarrassing. Black power! Come on, give it up! Black power! You want the brother? Black power! Black power! Black power! Black power, black power, black power, black power, black power, black power.
So we thank you very much. It's for us always a pleasure to be at Africa Echoes. That seems as if it's becoming an annual event for us. We have been asked, I assume you've received your flyers, we've been asked to speak on the fundamentals for unity, power, and economic independence in Africa. We want to make it clear from the very beginning that when one speaks of independence, one speaks of both political and economic independence. That must be properly understood. And certainly when one speaks of politics and economics, they are intertwined. There is no question about that. But also while being intertwined, they are separated. There's nothing unusual about that. In life, everything is the same and at the same time, not the same. This may sound confusing if one doesn't properly understand life's contradictions, but we repeat, everything is the same, and at the same time, not the same. All of us in here are the same. We're human beings. All of us in here are the same. We're Africans. But while we're the same, we're also not the same. Some of us are men, some of us are women. Some of us are short, some of us are tall. Some of us are genuinely revolutionary, ready to kill and die for the people. Some of us may be agents sent in here to suffer and make the people die. So while we are the same, we are not the same. So strong is this aspect of everything being the same and not the same While every human being in the world has fingerprints, every fingerprint is different. Thus, while politics and economics are intertwined the same, they also must be separated. For a people who are oppressed, this must be properly understood. Otherwise, it will create a lot of confusion. And the job of the enemy is not only to rip off our labor, not only to steal our resources, but more importantly, to confuse us in our very thinking. That any time a people seek to be free, they must think differently from their oppressors. If you do not think differently from the enemy, you will pose solutions which will help the enemy, and while you think you're advancing, you'll only be standing still while marching time. But this aspect must be properly understood. Of course, Brother Kumba, who spoke before us, and from our discussions here before, the central problem which faces our people is still on the agenda. We are a disorganized people. We are a disorganized people. The first phrase of our talk is called Fundamentals for Unity. We must look at unity properly because some people get confused on what unity is. Some people think that unity is a feeling or a sentiment. Some people even feel that unity can be found in movements of mobilization. Thus you will hear such inaccurate statements as, in the 1960s we were so united. We were not united in the 1960s. That great son of Africa, Osagyefo, Kwame Nkrumah, says that unity presupposes organization. Simply put, a people cannot be united unless they are organized. Thus, anytime one speaks of unity, one must speak of organization. And if there is no organization, there is no unity at all. Of course, there may be fragments of it, aspects of it. Of course, when we come to speak about our people's struggle, we must look at our people and their struggle. We must not listen to the interpretations from those outside. We must not even take facts from the outside. But we must look precisely at the struggles of our people. This will give us the directions. Let me give you an example. We know that all people who are oppressed will struggle for their liberation. It is a scientific law that wherever there is oppression, there is resistance. Or, in cold science, for every action, there has to be a reaction. So once the people are oppressed, there must be a reaction, resistance to the oppression. This resistance is constant, even if you cannot see it with the naked eye. A brother the other day, same age as I, who was speaking in Baltimore, Maryland, he said, you know, Brother Kwame, he said, I was down in the streets with y'all in the 60s, I was in the army, but I got touched by it, and I want to tell you something, since I've been out of the army, we ain't been doing nothing. I said, really? He said, no. I said, is that so? He said, we ain't done nothing. I said, really? I said, we were in Baltimore in 1960. He said, I was here in the army. I said, did you dream in your wildest dreams that in 1990, you would have an African mayor in Baltimore, Maryland? He said, no, I think about it, but we got one, but it don't mean nothing. I said, yeah, we got that, we ain't even doing nothing. Just imagine when we start doing something. In the 1960s, we've done nothing. They've given us 320 mayors of the biggest cities in the country. We've done nothing. Since the 1960s, we've done nothing. They've given us all sorts of visibility all over. We've done nothing. Do you know what will happen when we do something? Thus, it is clear for us to understand the resistance constant all the time. The job of the enemy is to confuse you into thinking that your people are doing nothing, so you too will do nothing. But of course, a conscious man, a conscious woman recognize that if the people are doing nothing, they must do more. They must do more. Of course, our people's movement must be properly analyzed. A people, we say, will fight just on instinct, and certainly we fight on instinct. Since we've been brought to this country, we've been resisting without organization, just sporadic, and we've gone from burning plantations to burning cities. All of this without any organization at all. And we will tell you that without organization, the oppression continues to heighten on capitalist America. Not only will we go from burning plantations to burning cities, we will burn the nation. Because the people who are oppressed will be free and will do anything to be free, including giving their lives and burning their houses. But we must move this instinct to a higher level, organized level. If not, we make errors. Bourgeois historians make the statement that history repeats itself. History cannot repeat itself. If people can repeat their errors, yes, but history does not repeat itself. Let us look at the rebellion of Watts in 1965. In 1965, Africans rose up in Watts and burnt Watts down. They created havoc in America. In 1992, the same Africans rise up on a greater level and create havoc in Los Angeles. People may think that history is repeating itself. No. The people are repeating their errors under vastly changed conditions. What are the changed conditions? In 1965, there was no African mayor in Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, it was a white mayor, racist. His name was Sam Yorty. In 1992, when the Africans rose up, there was an African who was mayor. His name was Tom Bradley, and he came through the ranks of the police. He was a police lieutenant. The fee should know about police brutality more than Yorty. But under his reign, police terrorism was higher than it was under Yorty's reign. These are statistical facts. In 1965, when the Africans in Watts rebelled, there was no African who was chairperson of the Democratic Party. In 1992, an African, biologically anyway, by the name of Ron Brown, was chairperson of the Democratic Party. In 1965, when the Africans in Watts rebelled, there were no African mayors. In 1992, there were over 320 of the largest cities in this country, in New York, in Newark, in Philadelphia, in Washington, in Detroit, etc., etc., etc. Angela Davis, the other day, said that in all of her experience, she thinks that the Africans in America are now going through the worst of times. Someone asked me what I thought of the comment. I said, she's correct. It is the worst of times, but it is also the best of times. So how can you say that? I'm a revolutionary. What concerns me is the rising consciousness of the masses of our people, and it continues to rise at breakneck speed. With rising consciousness and worsening conditions, there must be revolution. It is physical. We are still talking about these changes from 65 to 92 to show the errors that people repeated, but to show the progress they have made. In 1965, when the Watts Rebellion occurred, I remembered many Africans in this country condemned it. Many from what they call modern organizations came before the television cameras and said, these are criminals and animals. They're spoiling the race. They're just going crazy. They're looters. They have nothing to do with political program. They condemned them. But in 1992, they couldn't find one African to condemn the rebellion in Los Angeles. We said we must look at our people and see their movement. From 1965 to 1992, whether we like it or not, we must admit that certain reforms were made in the American capitalist system. Certainly, when the Africans rebelled in Watts in 1965, none of them even conceived that we would have 320 mayors in 1992. It was beyond their wildest imagination. But today we've arrived at 320 and it means absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, the conditions of the masses are worse. Thus, clearly, the reforms instituted upon the people cannot solve the problems of the people. Thus, if one properly understands the movement of the people, even instinctively, the rebellion of Los Angeles tells the United States capitalist system that the reforms which you've made from 1965 to 1992 means absolutely nothing to us. The only solution is revolution. Of course, if you do not understand your people's movement, you will think that they just jumped up. You will not see progressively the movement towards it. If all these reforms, the conditions get worse, then these reforms mean absolutely nothing. Therefore, the objective conditions of the rebellion of April in Los Angeles told the entire world that Africans have been put now on the path of violent confrontation to make revolution in America, and it's the only solution. These are the progressive aspects. Of course, the error is clear. What was the error of the people? In 1965, we were not organized. In 1992, we're still not organized. This, then, is the error. Everything changes all the time. But men and women have a responsibility to become an active agent, especially in social change, for the benefit of humanity. Indeed, if 1965 to 1992, if you've been doing nothing for your people to help advance the unity of the people, then you must be blamed for the repetitive error of our people in Los Angeles in 1992. It must be properly understood. And Krumah says, unity presupposes organization. Of course, we have fragments of unity. That's why we who understand the people know that we'll be united. Our people have unity of action. We lack unity of thought. As a people, we have great unity of action that sometimes shocks and surprises us ourselves. But we lack completely and totally any aspect of unity of thought. One must come and understand this properly. In the first place, a people may come together and fight together for things they're against. It doesn't mean that they're all for the same thing. One must not get confused here. The independence struggle in Africa can be most destructive. Africans were oppressed by all the European colonial powers, France, Belgium, Portugal, Italy, Spain, etc., etc. Africans in the 1950s, thanks to the World War II, which weakened the struggle of Hitler, which weakened England, which weakened France, which weakened Portugal, which weakened all the colonial system, allowed the Africans the opportunity to rise up for independence. One must understand properly the historical movement. The positive aspect of Hitler was that he weakened all our enemies. And when he weakened them, we just walked right up and started to knock them down to take independence. Of course, all the Africans who came together wanted the British out. Put them out, put them out. They wanted the French out, put the white man out. But not all of them wanted the same thing. Some wanted the white man out to take the white man's place so they can continue to exploit Africans. Some wanted the imperialists out so that they could create a system, a just system, among Africans where there'll be no exploitation of one by the other. But simply because you're against something doesn't mean that you're all for the same thing. And this must be properly brought home to us. When a people come to fight a revolutionary struggle, they don't react against the enemy. I don't hate capitalism. I hate American imperialism. But I don't hate it just because I'm full of hate. I love my people. And anything that messes with my people, I'll destroy without pity and without mercy. But consequently, our hatred for this system is not against the system, but it's for what we are for. Consequently, it is what you are for that will give you purpose of unity. Unity of action is powerful among us. I'm a revolutionary. Since I've been an early youth, I've been planning rebellions in this country. Last Friday night at Gloria Richardson of Cambridge, I reported to her, we used to plan rebellions.
That's right.
When Dr. King was talking nonviolence, we'd walk right there. The cameras were there, we'd be nonviolent. When the cameras turned off, we'd be busting caps. That's right. And so we use nonviolence to create rebellions. If you look throughout this country, you see in Cambridge, Maryland, nonviolent movement, rebellions were created. Dick was running the project. If you look Nashville, Tennessee, nonviolent organizations, Dick was running it, rebellions. If you look, we were an organizer, and that is my job, and now in Africa, it's even on a bigger scale. But I promise you that if any of you gave me the task of organizing a rebellion in Los Angeles, it would throw me. I have to take a great deal of time here, and anyone who's conscious and knows that in order to be free, our people must rebel, and we've been doing scientific study in this. If we ask you now, organize a rebellion in Los Angeles, it would be extremely difficult. But these Africans can jump up overnight without thinking about it and do it. Let's get it on. Unity of action, so strong that they bring the very United States Army and its head punk, Powell, who went to Baghdad to come back to Los Angeles. To make a rebellion is not an easy task. To make a rebellion in the most powerful imperialist country in the world is not an easy task. Yet Africans can do it overnight without thinking and without planning. Do you know what will happen when Africans come consciously to think and to plan their actions? Because we have unity of action, we lack unity of thought. See, this unity of thought that will bring us confusion now when we come to politics and economics. I've heard many people who come before us to tell us that, you know, our biggest problem is economic. We ain't got no money. That's true. So the only solution now is when we get strong economically. So we got to fight on the economic front. That makes no sense. Here, lack of analysis is clear. We do not deny that the basic problem of the Africans is economic. That is to say, our continent, Africa, is being raped, and the labor of our people is raped everywhere. But the solution is not economic. The solution in the first step is political. The solution in the first step is political. Matter of fact, if you were to just take a cursory glance at our struggle, you would see that Africa is really not poor. They just make nonsense. Africa is the richest continent on the face of the earth, the richest. Only trouble is that we do not control our wealth. The wealth is controlled by others who are not Africans, who use that wealth to further exploit us. That's not we're not poor. We just do not control the politics of our continent. Man told me Africans in America are poor. I told him, no, they're not poor. Yeah, we're poor. No. These Africans are not poor. If every African in America, when every African in America becomes conscious, and even when every African in America gives nothing but 5 cents a week to a common economic pot, we will have enough money to solve all the problems we have. We are not poor. We are poorly organized. This aspect then must be driven home carefully. Kwame Nkrumah said it best. Seek ye first the political kingdom, said Nkrumah. Once you have that, all else will fall in place. This problem of seeking the political solution as the first aspect of the proper answer to economic independence, we said, must be properly understood. Even with the little reforms that we've had in the United States of America since 1965, you will see that this bourgeoisie that they are creating in Africa is a result of the political power that mayors have as powerless as they are. But this advancement, of course, comes just from them. It is a result of the political movement that advances them. When you see a basketball player getting $1 million today, don't think that it was economics that put him there. It's a political struggle that caused the concession by the enemy to confuse us. When you see any African today making a lot of money, don't think this time they make money because of the political movements of the masses. Thus, this understanding that politics must come first before we speak of economics must be properly born into our minds. Not only that, if you are not properly politically organized, not knowing what to do with your resources, if you get the resources, you can stupidly spend them. I'm certain, for example, many people are asking for reparations. Brother asked, what do you think about reparations? I said, what's a good idea, I guess, but you know, before we get it, we got to be organized. He said, why? I said, because if they gave us the money today, we will waste it on curlies and smoke. A people must be politically organized to be able to channel their economic wealth. Secretary Ray says it best. He says, we as Africans must not do the politics of our economics, but the economics of our politics. It's a very serious statement. Most Africans who speak about freedom talk about doing the economics of the politics, and most of them, when they talk about getting some money, are actually talking about getting a piece of the pie. They know the American pie is distributed unequally. That doesn't bother them. Only thing bothers them is they're not getting a piece of the big slice. So if they can get a bigger slice and everybody else has got a poorer slice, that's their problem. They will think they're advanced. And even if you would look since the 60s, all the economic advancement of these people, what has it benefited the masses or our people? Absolutely nothing. All these millionaires we have that we hear about, they're here, they're there, they're everywhere, they're doing this. What has it benefited the masses? This is because we do not, again, properly understand politically. We allow the enemy to define us even economically. And that's what the enemy does, is to confuse us. No African anywhere in the world, and if you don't know the world, you know America, no African in America has ever advanced on their own individual struggle. It is always mass struggle that produces individual advancement in this country. You cannot show me one. Not David Dinkins. David Dinkins didn't become mayor because he's a good politician. He became mayor because the Africans in this country sweated, bled for political pressure, and concessions had to be made. But when you see David Dinkins advance, you must not think that this is an individual advancement. You must not think, thank you. You must not think that this is he who did it by himself. He is there as a result of mass struggle. What the system wishes to tell us is that the advancement is being made, and we're supposed to believe that this mass struggle, which leads to individual advancement, is supposed to satisfy us. The only indicator of progress comes from mass struggle. Thus, the only indicator is mass advancement. Simply put, for us as a people, unless the masses progress, there is no progress at all. And the masses cannot stand up economically like this. They have to be first politically organized. And Kruger is absolutely correct. Seek ye first the political kingdom. All else shall be added thereunto. This aspect, we say, must be properly understood. If you understand properly the political movement of Africa, you will not be upset. You will see clearly Africa is moving to a unified socialist continent and no force on earth can stop it. If you do not understand Africa, you might become confused of the blood in Nigeria and the blood in Somalia. But we who understand life know that no advancement of humanity has ever occurred since man and woman first appeared on the face of the earth without the shedding of blood. This is a fact. We may not like it, but it's a fact. So strong is this that Jesus Christ himself is able to say, there shall be no redemption of sin without the shedding of blood. Consequently, the spilling of blood does not upset a revolutionary, just like it doesn't upset a doctor. When you come and you're bleeding, a doctor doesn't get upset. He just looks properly, see where you're bleeding, how to stop the bleeding, and move it on. As revolutionaries, when we see blood, we don't get upset. We just see how to use this blood to advance the struggle. That's all. It's as simple as that. It's a scientific proposition. Very scientific. As a matter of fact, in revolution, there's no room at all for sentimentality. If you're sentimental, you will never be a revolutionary. You just create errors and cause many deaths. The blood that is being spread in Liberia, the blood that is being spilled in Somalia, is nothing other than the blood that is going to cement a unified socialist Africa. It is only those who know nothing of Somalia and Liberia can be confused. If you were just to look at Somalia itself on its own, you will see that Somalia itself was divided into three parts by English imperialism, by Italian imperialism, and by French imperialism. Malcolm X said it best. He said, all goodbyes, ain't them gone. He said, when the European imperialist power said goodbye in Africa, it didn't mean they were gone. They had already created the troubles before they left, and they would work more on the troubles before it was finished. All the attempt is very clear. They want to make it appear as if Africans are incapable of governing themselves, and since they're incapable of governing themselves, since they said that, since independence, the white man himself must come back, be in the form of the United Nations, to establish order and peace. That's all, but it's all vain. They will go nowhere. At our meeting last year, we showed the points why Europe can never unite before Africa, and before we were finished, the trouble started in Yugoslavia. We do not listen to the bourgeois press to make our analysis. We watch the movement of our people because they are the makers of our history. If you would look even at the reports of Somalia, these gang lords, these clans, they're not fighting the same areas. Each of them is fighting to control all of Somalia. That alone should tell you something. If indeed they were just clans trying to stay by themselves, they would stay by themselves. But everyone wants to control Somalia. Nobody's going back to the clans. All are going to a greater Africa. The problem is extremely good for us in Africa, and the condition is clear. No part of Africa, no part of Africa, from Cairo to Azania, have not seen political struggle lead to gunfire. Every part of Africa has already examined gunfire as a means to arrive at political power. Thus, in America, people are confused about politics and the gun. They think they should be separated. But in Africa, every peasant knows today that the gun and politics equals one and the same. They are more advanced than the people in America. They are far more advanced. The problem isn't to disarm Africa. Kruger is correct. Put a gun in everybody's hand, Jack, and the problem will be regulated. Every time they disarm the people, why do you want to disarm the people? Why? In Guinea, when we had a socialist government, and when we overthrew the military regime, which we will do before this year is out, we will put guns back into the hand of everyone. When everybody have a gun, that stuff don't go nowhere. If you look, massacres only occur with those who have guns and those who do not have guns. That's where your massacres are. But when everybody got guns, ain't no massacre, Dad. Ain't no massacre. It's even Steven. Because it's necessary for us to understand the program we're calling for, even a political program, calls for guns in the hands of everyone properly politically educated to defend the interests of Africa. Those gangs who are bad, they have guns, and the gangs that are good, they don't have guns, and they're the ones who suffer. This is question of a political program of putting guns in the hands of everyone becomes clear even before you arrive at economic independence. Those who speak of economic independence really think that we're going to push and scream with the capitalist system and they're going to give us some of what we're supposed to get and everything will go there. Sometimes you have to destroy the entire country when you fight for liberation. Haiti becomes extremely destructive here. In 1803, Haiti was the most democratic country in the world. Yeah, the world.
Right.
And many people are always giving us Africans lessons on democracy. Can you dig that?
In 1803, Haiti was the only country in the world that did not allow slavery.
The only one. It was the most democratic country in the world. And for this price of democracy, Haiti bled tremendously. It had to fight the French. It had to fight the Portuguese. It had to fight the Spanish. It had to fight the British. It had to stop the mechanisms of Americans until 1915 when they finally put their heels on there and they colonized Haiti.
But if you will look at the Haitian struggle, we say it's destructive. When the Haitians decided to take the island of Haiti and to destroy slavery once and for all, the French were then dominating Haiti. Napoleon was then the lord of Europe. His armies had swept through Europe. When he heard these little slaves in Haiti were trying to question his power, he sent his very brother-in-law to go and crush these slaves. They came in big ships, the French. The slaves in Haiti watched as the ships circled and came. They waited. And when it became really clear that the French troops were actually going to come onto Haiti, the first order that was given to the revolution was burn the entire island to a crisp. And the first thing that was done in the Haitian Revolution was all the crops were burned, everything was burned, nothing but the ashes were left, and then they said to the French, come, let us tango here, because it's a life or death struggle. Of course, if the Haitians were looking for economic advancement first, they would have tried to get some of the sugarcane plantation, science, they would want to make, they would never be free. They would never be free. It's like some of those who say, yeah, you all burn down your own houses. Yeah, Jack, I burn my house for my freedom. I give my life. What's my house? Don't talk capitalist nonsense to me. Property is never more important than anyone's liberation. But if you're not careful, this economic independence thing will make property more important than the people's liberation. Now, I have no trouble in burning the entire American nation from New York to California for my freedom. We say, as Secretary told the French in 1956, as for us, we would rather be poor and free than be rich and enslaved. But do you know some Africans in America, to be rich and enslaved? Well, that's a muscle. Of course, we know it becomes confusing because in the capitalist system, some people were killed for money. And some people get confused, but of course, we know killing is the most grave offense a human being can commit. And we hope that when one kills, it will not be for money, but it must be for the advancement of humanity. Indeed, as far as we can see, this is the only justification for killing, the advancement of humanity. Otherwise, there is no justification at all. So for us, it is the political approach that must come first. We've seen it clearly here. It is not to say that once you become politically free, you will not become independent. That's not true. Cuba is a clear example here.
That's right. That's right.
Cuba is very poor, but very, very free.
That's right.
South Korea is richer than Cuba, but they are under the heel of American imperialism. Cuba is very, very poor, but everybody in Cuba is willing to defend the island to its death.
Yes,
America African capitalism will confuse you. They say all the time, oh, Cuba is so poor, we'll get them. You don't know nothing, Jack. The Vietnamese whoop them on one bowl of rice a day. They really don't think the Cubans gonna do it on half a bowl. As a matter of fact, the poorer a people are, the more determined is their suffer. Get a rich man on the front line who's got a big house, good car, all this. Get a poor man who ain't got nothing. He'll fight the hardest. The poor man ain't got nothing to lose at all. And if you want to fight, you still look at it. You know, we'll be careful. We get this building. Why, you wouldn't blow the building up. You know what I'm saying? You'd be trying to save the building, and that's what the enemy waiting for. You say, oh, you got the building. They shoot you down. If you bomb the building, all the enemy would be dead. You'd be free. Now, this question of economics and politics must be properly understood because it is thoroughly confused among us. Man told me the other day, well, you know, the final analysis, you need money to do everything. I told him, that's true. He said, if you ain't got money in organizations, you can't do nothing. I said, that's true, too. I said, but you know, as a young boy, I always worked for the poorest organization in my people. Matter of fact, when I used to walk into organizations and they were rich, I walked out quickly. They can't represent my people. Where are they getting the money from? When I walk into organizations, they got no money. That's what I want. Because this is one that truly represents the people. But how can we as a poor people come to talk about economic independence? How are we going to do it? We're not politically organized. We cannot collectively pool our resources. Because we're not politically organized, how are we going to get economics? From where will we get it? Of course, the petty bourgeois element in our community, they can get it quickly and confuse us and let us think that there is advancement. We spent a lot of time on this point because we wanted to be seriously, seriously driven home. For us, we must have first political organization. When we have political organization, then as a force, we can move economically. Let me just give you some simple examples. The NAACP is very weak in New York, in New Jersey, throughout the country. But I will bet you this. If in New York City, 1 million Africans joined the NAACP and were active members, I don't mean card-carrying life membership members, I mean active members going to weekly meetings like they go to work every day for the capitalist system. I mean going to weekly meetings like they go to church every Sunday. I mean going to weekly meetings, I bet you when the NAACP speaks in New York, the capitalist system would listen. It is political organization that we lack. And it's only political organization that can give us what we lack most, unity of thought. Why is this? If you will look at our community, you will find many organizations. Each of them propose a different solution. If you look at the NAACP, it does not propose the same solution as the Urban League. If you will look at the Nation of Islam, it does not propose the same solution as the All African People's Revolutionary Party. If you will look at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, it does not propose the same solution as the Congress of Racial Equality. Because if you will look properly in our community, you will see that the many organizations we have all propose different solutions to arrive at solving the problem. There is nothing wrong with this. As a matter of fact, this is most healthy for a disorganized people. Why? Because these organizations, in fact, reflect the ideas of the unconscious mass, of the unorganized mass. You know, among the people who are unorganized, and some will tell you, well, you know, Ben Hooks is the best one for me. Go among the people and they will tell you, can't nobody do the job like Johnny Jacobs of the Urban League? Go among the people that tell you, the only one saying something about you, Jack, is Farrakhan. That's the one who's down. You understand? But if you will go among our people, you will find the same divisions reflected in these political goals. We say this is healthy. What is unhealthy is the fact that the masses of the people do not participate in these organizations which they find close to their inclinations or their thinking as the solution to the problem. This is the tragedy. Hear me well. I am saying that if we have 500 organizations in America, and even if these 500 organizations are fighting each other, but we had every organization in America a member of these 500 organizations, we would have advanced greatly. This aspect of organization must be properly understood, political organization. I remember in 1991, we had some meetings with the Crips and the Bloods in Los Angeles. It was the third attempt we had with them to have unity, the third one. That meeting, if I remember correctly, took me about 4 or 5 hours. It was a long meeting. but it was worth it. We achieved the objective. After the meeting, I had to go to a meeting somewhere with some intelligentsia, one of the intelligentsia forces of our struggle. When I got there, I was late, so the man who was with me apologized. I said, oh, Brother Kwame is late, he was excuse us. We were talking to the Crips and Bloods, we finally got a peace treaty with them, everything is going nice. And the brother, man came to me and said, you were with the gangs? I said, yes. He said, you were with the gangs? I said, yeah. He said, what do you think about them? I said, I think they're good. He said, what? I said, yeah, they're organized. He said, were you wasting time with the gangs and we're here waiting for you? You prefer? I said, I prefer to stay with them than to stay with you. He said, why are you being, what are you saying? I said, listen. These gang kids, they have organizational discipline. You lack that. What do you mean by that? Organizational discipline means there's something more important than you, the organization. That's a heavy lesson to learn in an individualistic society. I said, these gang kids know that when the gang gives them an order, they got to do it. He said, but is that good? I said, it's good that they have organizational discipline. It is bad that it is misdirected. Our job is only to correctly direct it. Once that is done, the organizational discipline which they have will logically follow. But you have no individual, no organizational discipline. You don't even belong to an organization. You think you don't even need one. You think by yourself you can do so much. So when I put you in a party, I have so much struggle to convince you of the fact that there's something more important than you, your people. The brother in the gang, I don't have that trouble. Since he knows the gang is more important, I tell him, you know what the gang used to be? Now it's the people. Simple. This is the importance of organization. We as a people have no organizational discipline at all. And the capitalist system imposes this individual thinking upon us. We have great individuals. I see them all the time. They come in, they will speak loudly, they will talk about this, give us facts and all this, and then they run out the door. There's nothing left. We say we must look at our people to properly understand the problems we face. Dr. Martin Luther King was a great man. No one can take that away from him. But Dr. King was a human being, just like all of us, representing our movement. Thus, he would represent the weaknesses along with the strengths and the errors of our movements. Thus, when we come to analyze King, we don't analyze him like the bourgeois press. We must analyze him scientifically, critically. See what errors were made. How can we rectify them? How can we qualify our movement? Dr. King, as everyone knows, was perhaps one of the greatest mobilizers that this century has ever seen. Dr. King could mobilize the masses. But Dr. King was very short on organizing. He did no organizing at all. Dr. King would come into a little town. He would turn the town upside down. When he left, there's no question the science would be down. Segregation would be finished. But there'd be no organization there. Right. Jesse Jackson, who follows in the same trend, does the same thing. He mobilizes. He doesn't organize. What we need is organization. Not mobilization. We do not need mobilization because our people can be easily roused over anything. As a matter of fact, if you understand your people, we are the most instinctive revolutionary group in America. We rise up at the top of a hat for anything. Don't issue the brother today, you get everybody, like, for a hot minute, everybody jump up. Oh, the police is terrorists. The police is terrorists. Then they sit down. The police don't sit down. Matter of fact, the police already took all the photos of everybody who been in the demonstrations. They got where they were, where their license plate, everything. When everybody sit down, they come in and pick them off one by one.
Yeah.
One by one. And people continue with this. Our issue come up, they run for the issue. I ask myself, what is this? Che Guevara says, it's our job to start the fires and have these fingers put it out. But if we're not careful, they start the fires and we blame fire them. We run and put them out. Of course, here, the difference is between reform and revolution. Here, the difference is between reform and revolution. Malcolm X was an organizer. Malcolm X was an organizer. Malcolm X understood the necessity of organization. When he was expelled from the Nation of Islam, before you blinked an eye, he created two organizations. The Muslim Mosque Incorporated, Organization of African American Unity. Malcolm X was an organizer.
And following clearly his prescriptions, he organized one, the Muslim mosque, only for Muslims.
Malcolm was not confused.
He said, this one is one for Muslims. Anybody can come, white, black, yellow, green.
And he organized a political organization, the Organization of African American Unity. Only Africans can belong to that.
That's right.
That's right.
They will tell you, Malcolm changed, Malcolm changed. You let Malcolm change. They will change Malcolm for you, but you must know these people because they represent you. And you must know them not from the outside, but from the struggles of your people. Martin Luther King was poor in organizing. He was very poor organizer. You can see it even from his own history. If my memory serves me correctly, I think it was in 1964 when Martin Luther King tried to become president of the National Baptist Association. Let it be clear to you that Martin Luther King was the most famous Baptist preacher in this country. Jackson, not Jesse Jackson, another Jackson who was a reactionary, he was head of the National Baptist, and nobody knew him. In the struggle for presidency, if my memory serves me correctly, yes, my memory does serve me correctly, a man was even killed in the struggle, fell off the stage, killed. I remember Muhammad speaks blasted at that. He said, yeah, look at these Baptists, that's how they do it. Yes. And with all this, Dr. King never became president of the National Baptist Association. Even though he wanted to be, he never did because he had no organization skills. It wasn't that Dr. King was short of organizing, it said that he didn't see the importance of it because of his goals in the beginning. Dr. King was a reformist. He didn't look for power. He thought, listen, Kwame, these are people here, this Jim Clark, these people in the South, they don't know any better. When we come and we show them better, they'll do better. Fine, Dr. King. So for him, there's no need to get any big organization or power to take them over. It's just to show them how they've been incorrect, they will become correct, and they can still stay in power. So there's no need here for organization. This is a fact. In fact, this is Dr. King's approach. If you look at the very beginning, Dr. King praised the federal government all the time. When Stick was attacked, and he said, don't do that. Dr. King, he's a big, they say big thing, Jim Clark. No, 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 there's a difference here. Because the federal will come here and clean up the local. He actually believed that. Of course, he corrected the error. Before he died, he was going for the government straight to this for people's campaign. And the die had already been cast with the Vietnam War. Because when he came out against Vietnam, J. Edgar Hoover said, I told you he was a communist. Now he got to be killed. So King himself was progressing, but before he could progress to become properly organized to correct the errors that he corrected, that is to say, oh, it's not a moral question, it's really a question of power, and we need an organization to seize power, not moral struggle to influence those in power. Of course, by that time he was assassinated. Malcolm X, you said, was an organizer. But Malcolm X was assassinated when he just started to build organizations. The enemy does not sleep. The enemy knew that if they let Malcolm X get this organization off the ground, they would never be able to stop that. So Malcolm X was just at the beginning of organizations when they hit him. It must be instructive to all of us, at least it was instructive to me. When I was expelled from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, I looked around and said, uh-oh. I said, look at this. Well, well, well. But of course, I, being an organizer, always kept my head to the ground, and I've always known as an organizer, me by myself, I can't do nothing. You can do a lot by yourself, as Matt Jones said the other night, but one thing you cannot do by yourself is struggle for your people. Your people got to struggle. Even if you're the best one, you love the people, you want to take all the bullets for the people. Superman only exists in the minds of Hollywood writers. Rambo will only exist on the screen. There's no one man or no one woman that can free us. Only us will free us. Only us. From the time I've been a young man, I have always belonged to an organization. From the time I've been a young man, I've always belonged to an organization. When the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was getting ready to expel me, I was already a member of the Black Panther Party. Matter of fact, when they expelled me, I was the honorary prime minister of the Black Panther Party, and they had some crazy brothers up in there and crazy sisters. And I knew the pigs knew, you shoot me, Jack, these people can jump up against you, you understand? Your protection is not bodyguards, your protection is the masses of the people, and the more organized they are, the more protected you are. Some of you get carried away. Think you get a lot of money, you get some bodyguards, you could be a look out here, they blow Kennedy away. What you talking about? All they do is blow you and the bodyguards away. So instead of just you, you're taking five people with you. And indeed, the political consequence of any revolutionary in his death is one question. Does your blood nourish the revolution?
Yes, sir.
It is in this light that revolutionaries are never afraid of death.
That's right. I work hard against these enemies, Jack. I don't even sleep half the time, you understand? But if they think I'm bad against them now, kill me.
My blood will nourish this revolution like we've never seen. That's why for revolutionaries, death is always a welcome sight.
For the people?
Look at it. Brothers die for nothing.
Let me die for the people, please. They'll say my name for the rest of this life.
Look at Martin Luther King. Everybody will praise him. Many brothers died the same day King died. Some were even shot by others. Nobody knew them. Nobody will ever know them. But everybody will know King because everybody knew whenever King took a bullet, that bullet was for his people. See, this understanding of organization is crucial. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference itself, you see, is lost about 400 plus because it was more mobilized than organized. But the Nation of Islam, to which Malcolm X gave a lot of his blood, and even though he left it, is still functioning thanks to the work of Malcolm. Organization continues your work. Organization continues your work.
We've had great individuals, I mean great ones, who've done so much, and even here, they're here today. They speak so much, they give us African history, they give us this, they give us that.
When they die, anything remembers they wrote a book, this is the book they wrote. What did they do to organize the people? Nothing. Why did they do nothing? Because they thought they didn't need an organization, because after all, I mean, they... Ever since I've been 16 years old, I've been in organizations.
When I got ready to resign from the Black Panther Party, before I resigned,
I was a member of the All-African People's Revolutionary Party. Well, that's handing my resignation.
Said, don't do that. Now they got you. I said,
no, they don't. I'm a member of the All-African People's Revolutionary Party. I'm protected by Secretary Kwame Nkrumah. I got all Guinea behind me. They could not touch me now. They shoot me now. My blood will nourish Africa like they've never seen. It is organization. And only organization that gives us clear guidance.
My past and strongest political organization has reached one of the highest positions today. I am a political advisor to the Democratic Party of Guinea.
The party of Secretary of Guinea. This party is involved in political struggle to overthrow a military regime, which must give up power this year. They themselves had to unban our party, which they banned.
And after unbanning our party in April of last year, they proposed a set a date of December 27th for elections.
In October, they saw there was no way for them to win. They saw clearly that our party would take power.
They, being controlled like the French today, the French being stupid, did the same thing they did in Algeria.
They postponed the election. Postponement of the election only shows clear defeat. Thus, this year is the task of our party to restructure itself and to take power by any means necessary. Organization.
Thus, for us to have the fundamentals for unity, power, and economic independence in Africa,
we must have political organization.
Now, this political organization is clear. If you will look throughout the world, scientifically speaking, at political organizations, you will find outside of Africa, all political parties are vanguard parties. A vanguard party is a party which takes a small percentage of the society, the most conscious. They come to the party and they work for the people.
Africa has presented to the world the mass party. The mass party says,
everybody in the country has a responsibility to the country and must be doing something political.
The other day when talking to a journalist, I said, I'm for forcing people to get into political organizations.
He said, you're going to force people to get into political organizations?
I said, oh yeah.
He said, you're going to just do that?
I said, do you force them to go to school? Do you not have compulsory education? Do you not force them to pay taxes?
Who are you playing with? You think they're going to do what we play with?
Yes. If I had the power in my society, everybody must belong to a political organization because it directs your life.
And at least if you're against it,
you ought to know why. And then you ought to know how to fight it.
Of course, we haven't reached that stage yet, but we are getting there. Our point now is through moral persuasion and logic and reason to show the people that really this problem that we have our people is just one. We're disorganized. And organization doesn't mean mobilization. I am sure there are African echoes. There are people who come here every week, listen to speakers, clap, go back, and never do any organizing work for the people except to come every Sunday.
Even the Bible says it is more blessed to give than to receive. And when you give for the people whom God has created, there is nothing more blessed than that. We said in order to be unity, there must be organization. And the organization says give you political thought. It does. If you're a member of the Nation of Islam, and you're a member of the Nation of Islam, and I ask you certain questions, you respond differently. If you're a member of the Nation of Islam, and I ask you, do you think that all of us should be integrated in the American capitalist system? You say yes. If you're a member of the Nation of Islam, no, we got to separate. You won't even let me finish. You're a member of the Nation of Islam. Honorable Muhammad says we must separate. Allah Akbar. Yes. But the organization gives you political thought, even if you're unaware of it. But a member of the Urban League will never have the same position as a member of the Nation of Islam or the Freshman of Army in the United States of America. One will say join the army, the other will say destroy it. But you do get political thought, and you must understand it. What the enemy seeks to stop is to have us get political thought. Because while we have unity of action, we have no thought. And it is thought that must come to help clarify and qualify action. If there's no thought process, the action is the same. Thus, from 1965 and what to 1992, there have been no thought process, no universal thought process by the masses, thus the action remains the same. You have a responsibility then to your people. Africa, we tell everyone, will be free, unified, and socialist. No force on earth stop it. Anyone looking at the minds of our people will see this, not confused by the capitalist press, whose job it is to let us believe that we are so unstable, that there's total insecurity in our community. I mean, if you listen to them, you won't even go out. And this is their job. Their job is to make each and every one of us the enemy of each and every one of us. So when you walk down the street, you no longer say, hey, brother, what's happening? You're afraid, you know. Oh, my God. The only way this can be combated is through mass political organization. The only way this can be combated is through mass political organization. I think we're about at the conclusion. Fundamentals for unity presupposes organization. Now, we did say one thing, and this is a point we must hammer home. We said that when you think, you must think differently from the enemy. The confusion is here. Many Africans in America actually think, and even some who call themselves revolutionary and Marxist-Leninists, say that we Africans in America have the same culture like other people in America. And they say it. This is a great error. This causes a great deal of confusion. Secretary says, a chaque peuple sa culture. Every people have their culture. As a matter of fact, our culture has been in conflict with the American capitalist culture and continues to be and will be until we destroy it. If you're not thinking clearly about your culture, bring big errors. I'll give you an example. People have a problem with gay rights and gay and lesbian rights. Man Miller says, you know, how come I hear you speak? I never hear you speak about gay and lesbian rights. Yes, that's right. He said, but I go all the others, they speak about it. I said, we are not from the same political platform. I fight for my people's culture. I know they have one. My job is every day to more properly define it and to fight for it. You think we don't have one, so you fight from a capitalist culture. You'll never get anywhere. Africa has a culture of its own. And her people are the carriers of that culture. And anyone who knows anything about culture, when it's attacked, Jack, the people hide it from themselves. Malcolm X said it. He said, they don't call themselves Africans, but you scratch them a little bit, you'll see how African they are. They've hidden Africa from themselves. That is to say, the people seeing the enemy overwhelm them will hide the very culture from the people themselves. The conscious element will come to see how they've hid it, to pick it up. Let me give examples on homosexuality. If you will look at the history of Europe, and you know the first law is always to know the enemy, you will see Europe has a bloody history on the relationship of homosexuality, from Greece all the way down to today, where they're bashing the heads of homosexualities. Africa has none of this. Even Africans in America do not bash in the heads of homosexuals. The question of homosexuality is a question of intolerance. Europe's culture is most intolerant.
It's really a culture that has no diversity. It's deep conformity.
In the 1960s, if you would go to white colleges, all the white boys on there were wearing crew cuts and sandwiches.
They all look alike.
The other day I saw one wearing long hair. He said, "What did you do for me anyway?" I said, "Made it possible for you to wear long hair." Yes, broke up the conformity.
It's most intolerant. It's most intolerant.
African culture is very tolerant. As a matter of fact, that's why we're the trouble we're in today.
I remember as a young tough in Harlem, I used to go to the Audubon Ballroom where Malcolm was assassinated.
I used to go to Rockton Palace, and if my memory serves me correctly, it used to happen in April. It still happens.
All the homosexuals in the African community, and they put up signs, and I see them now. They have a big transvestite ball. And they would come at Rockton Palace. We were tough. I mean, 15, 16 arms.
But wouldn't anybody think about hitting any of them? The best we could say, "You really think I want as a woman?"
No, none whatsoever. The hardest organization in our community against homosexuality is the Nation of Islam.
You hear Minister Farrakhan now saying, "You better tell them they gotta straighten up their wrists."
Yes.
But everyone knows James Baldwin. And James Baldwin, no African ever hid their homosexuality. James Baldwin was a homosexual. And yet you would hear Malcolm X and Farrakhan praising James Baldwin for his contribution to the struggle. So if you will look at us, we're not an intolerant people. It's not in our culture. So to bring this problem, which is a European cultural problem, into our community is only to bring us more problems, and we got more than they have anyway. So I told the man, "I'm very sorry. This is not a problem for our culture. It is a problem for your culture, and we can help and give you tactics and strategies on how to raise civil disobedience. Of course, we are experts at that." Just to give examples, one more. All women are oppressed everywhere. This is a fact. African women are, African men are, we oppress our women. There's no question here. But in order to properly understand the oppression of each woman, you must understand their particular history. Africa produced the very first queens in the world. And these queens were not slave queens. They had proper power. Dr. Henry Clark has written a small pamphlet, the title has escaped me, in which he talks about the contribution of queens. It's a very small pamphlet, I'm sorry, the title has escaped me, I read so much. But in the book, the pamphlet, Dr. Clark shows and demonstrates that every time a queen occupied the throne in Africa, Africa advanced technologically, socially, politically, economically. And if a queen was on the throne and the enemy invaded, there was no compromise at all. These are historical facts. We say African women are exploited today, oppressed today. Yes, they are. African men exploit their women everywhere, but the one place they can never exploit the women is on the front lines fighting for the people. If you will look at the history of Africa, you will see women on the front lines all the way from the first queens, all the way down through Nzinga, all the way to Atata Shaku, on the front lines fighting for the people. No other race has produced women warriors as we have for the entire world, even though they are warriors. I heard much nonsense about the 60s from those who've done nothing but write books. Chinese say, "No participation, no right to speak." Thank you. No participation, no right to speak. If you haven't participated in something, really you can't speak about it, because what you observe and what you see and what is not the same thing. I've heard them say that women play no role in the struggle. Maybe, how could they say that about us? Say women are oppressed. Yes, our women are oppressed. But to say that our women play no role in the struggle, sure, nobody knows what they're talking about. As a matter of fact, they talk about the 60s. Martin Luther King got up because the woman sat down. Rosa Parks. It was Rosa Parks who put us on our feet. Where'd they come from? It was Rosa Parks. And Rosa Parks wasn't just some little seamstress. She was an organizer, secretary for the movement of the NAACP. She's an organizer.
People say the first organization out of the student welfare called the committee. It was founded by a woman, Ella Baker. When I was chairperson of STIC, my position was the most public, but the most powerful position was the executive secretary. It was held by a woman, Ruby Doris Smith Robinson. Just because you don't know your history and you don't know your culture, you shouldn't respond. If you're ignorant, you should seek knowledge before you answer. And the people, Africans, we know nothing about our struggle. It's these interpretations brought to us that we repeat like a parrot without knowing anything. Even the Black Panther Party, which they speak about, people didn't know that Elaine Brown, a woman, was chairperson of the party. And anyone who knows anything about the history knows that the most militant segment of the Black Panther Party was the Black Liberation Army. And everyone knows it was led by a woman, a Fatou Sakho. Even if they didn't know it, the police knew it. Of course, the police used to say everywhere, we got to get her because she's the soul of the liberation. Once we get her, she's finished. They finished. That's what they said. And once they arrested her, they thought she was finished. But they arrested her, her sister, and brothers risked their lives to go into the jail, bring her out, to her, to the when you come to fight against an enemy, you must think differently from the enemy. And the only way you can think differently from the enemy is when you're rooted in your culture. When you are proud of your culture, and when you properly understand that the struggle here is really a cultural struggle. Because in the final analysis, all struggles are struggles of ideas, and all ideas come from the given culture in which they find themselves. We cannot have an organization unless we have an ideology. And all organizations have them. Fraternities have them. Sororities have them. Churches have them. Social clubs, everyone has them. America has it. It may be defined to you, or it may not be defined, but it has it. If Clinton comes today and says, all right, we're going to Baghdad, pick up your guns. People who believe in the American capitalist system instinctively will pick up their guns and march to Baghdad. They may not even know why, but it's the ideology that drives them there. If you're a Christian, a true Christian, you will not cheat. You may not know why you do not cheat, but of course you, I mean, if you're a true Christian, I don't know about a jive Christian. I'm not a serious Christian. You know, one who really follows what they say they follow. I mean, you couldn't cheat. The reason you can't cheat is because the ideology of Christianity imposes itself upon you. That's for us to have organization, we must have ideology. Our party has been clear. We fought many battles in this since the 1960s. We've been telling them Marxism-Leninism is a good ideology, but it comes out of the culture of Europe. It cannot be good for us. They call us racist. They call us narrow nationalists. They call us chauvinists. Could you imagine that? We ain't got no power. We got all these big names. No power at all, you understand? We told them plenty. It cannot be. Because the culture of Africa is different from the culture of Europe, as it's different from the culture of China. Doesn't mean in hostility too, just different. Woman is different from man. Doesn't mean hostile too. Only the social conditions make it so. Your ideology must come from your culture. It's only when your ideology comes from your culture that you begin to think differently from the enemy that you can really move. If you're thinking the same way the enemy is thinking, the enemy's solutions become your solution. That you end up by saying, yeah, America's a great country, and you know, well, it's a little bit racist, but you know, after all. But if you think from your people's struggle, and you know that your people are the victims of racism, have been, always will be, you say, as long as America remains racist, I've got to destroy it. You say you must think from your people's culture. But to have fundamentals of unity, we must have an African ideology. Because unity presupposes organization. And unless the organization is guided by African thought, hear me well, which is a result of African actions, hear me well, there will be nothing but confusion. And we repeat, the only way we'll be free is when we first conquer the political kingdom. and we give the proposal that this conquering must be done by a mass party. Thus, for us, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, the only way we will solve our problem here as well is when every African belongs to the same political party from South Carolina to Azania. Now, everyone agrees with this. Some people even say it's impossible. Could you imagine that? You know, I'm a good Democrat with a small D. I believe that people have the right to think and what they want to think, but even the Bible tells you that you can sin against God, thought, word, and deed. And you can sin against your people in thought, word, and deed. Anytime you think that your people cannot be united, you sin against them. The other day, having a discussion, brother said, "Oh, Africa will never be united." I said, "You're lucky I don't have a gun. I could shoot you just for saying that." He said, "All right, you're right to say everything you have a right to say, but there's some things you don't go out the limit of. You must understand freedom of speech. All freedom of speech is bounded by the ideology. If we were in a church today, and we all believe in God, and it was communion, or we were in a mosque, and we were having Friday prayers, and somebody came into the church or the mosque and started cursing God and insulting God, he could get killed for freedom of speech." All freedom of speech is bounded by its ideology. If we're having Bible class here, there will never be a discussion of, does God exist? That will never arise. Once you get in the church, God exists, end of discussion. That's a fact. Consequently, you must know that freedom of speech is bounded by the ideology. And if we are saying that we want to organize Africans all over the world, and the enemy is saying it can't be done, and you come and you say the same thing, you're working for the enemy. That's why we say when you think, you have to think differently from the enemy. But oh, there's so much problems we have. We'll never get out of these problems. I don't see how we can go. I don't see what we can do. Are you talking like the enemy? You sound just like the enemy. Matter of fact, are they paying you? No, I don't. You're working for nothing. At least I thought today we were slave for a wage. But you're going back to chattel. You ain't even getting no wage. At least if you're a slave today, get a wage. Yeah. You have to think differently. The only way you can think differently from the enemy is when your culture, which is opposed to the enemy, gives you your ideas and you become the personification of these ideas. Our people will be unified. Africa, we say, no force will stop her from the unification process. The only question you must ask yourself is the one we always pose to all Africans. What contribution will you make to your people's organization process? What contribution will you actively make to the unification process of your people? This contribution was made, must be made in total dialectic opposition to the enemy's thoughts. American capitalist system teaches us all the time that the real beauty of life, the highest goal in life, is to work, 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 achieve something, and then stop working and enjoy what you've worked for. Just relax. I mean, it gets so terrible that college students, once they graduate from college, don't read books anymore. Well, I graduated now, I got my paper. Frederick Douglass says, where there's no struggle, there is no progress. Progress is eternal. Progress is eternal. If progress is eternal, struggle is eternal. Not only is struggle eternal, a conscious man, a conscious woman looks for more struggle every day. Because the more struggle you confront, the stronger you become, the more you know, the more confident you are, the better able you are to serve your people. If I'm an eye doctor, when I graduate from university and become a doctor, I can do simple things. If I never challenge doing complicated operations, I will never advance. I will stay exactly where I am. And the only way I will advance is by confronting and even making errors. Perhaps making somebody blind while trying to save them. Yes, everybody makes errors. But unless you take that step, you'll never be able to save somebody who's going blind.
And maybe after making 3 people blind, you'll be able to save every other patient that comes to you. We say that we must not only look for struggle, but every day we must look for greater struggle, more challenging struggle. If I know 2 plus 2 is 4, unless I struggle with 4 plus 4, I will never know it's 8. I will stay at 2 plus 2. We say you must think directly different from the enemy. But those of us who come to struggle mustn't struggle like the way the enemy tells us. Jump up now, make some struggle, then you'll get a position and sit down and enjoy life. That's what happens. Now, in fact, those who don't struggle get the position of power and say, okay, brothers, everything is cool, I'm the mayor. Relax, I got it covered. We must look for more struggle. To have unity, we must have organization. To have organization, we must have ideology coming from our culture. For us to be united as a mass people, we must have mass organization. Each of us must make our contribution. We repeat, if you don't join our organization, join any organization working for your people's unity. And if you don't find one, make one. One thing is clear, until we're organized, we will not be free. And since we're going to be free, we will be organized. Make your contribution to your people's liberation movement. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for our Listen and Learn session with the Honorable Warrior Ancestor, Kwame Ture. And as you heard in the lecture, we can't mobilize without organizing, and we can't organize and not mobilize. And that's a lesson that we must learn from the past so that we won't continue to repeat the same mistakes in the future. So thank you for joining us, everyone. This is Queen Tahira signing off for the night. We love you. We thank you. And most of all, we appreciate you. We'll see you soon. Peace.
Life. I wonder. Will it take me under? Smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue Bahama waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a place. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing, fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people holding dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time, watch the blend read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons.
The way to be paradise life relaxing. Black, Latino, and Anglo-Saxon. Armani exchange the range. Cast, lost property, bath. Free at last. Brand new whips to crash. Then we laugh in the iller path. The villa houses for the crew. How we do? Trees for breakfast. Dime sexes have been stretches. So many years of depression make me vision the better living. Type of place to raise kids in. Opening eyes to the lies. History's told foul. But I'm as wise as the old owl. Plus the gold child. Seeing things like I was controlling. Click rolling. Tricking 6 digits on chicks and still holding. Trips to Paris, I civilize every savage. Give me one shot, I turn trite life to lavish. Political prisoner, set free, stress free. No work release, purple M3s and jet skis. Feel the wind breeze in West Indies. I think Coretta Scott King, mayor of the cities, and reverse things to Willie's. It's down foul, but every girl I meet to go downtown. I'd open every cell in Attica, send them to Africa.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all.
If you could be mine, we both shine.
If I rule the world,
still living for today. living worries. Duck down in car seats, he's mandatory. Running from Jake, getting chased, hunger for pace. These are the breaks, many mistakes, go down out of state. Wait, I had to let it marinate, we carry weight, trying to get late. Flip the ace back to safe, millionaire plan to keep the gap with the cock hammer. Making moves in Atlanta, back and forth scrambler. Cause you can have all the chips, be poor or rich, still nobody want a nigga have a shit. If I rule the world and everything in it, sky's the limit, I push the 245 infinite. It wouldn't be no such thing as jealousies or be felony. Strictly living longevity to the destiny I thought I'd never see, but reality struck. Better find out before your time's out. What the fuck?
Well, I rule the world.
Imagine that.
I free all my stars. I love them, baby. Black diamonds
and pearls. Could it be if you could be mine? We both shine.
If I rule the world,
still living for today in these last days of time.
If I rule the world,
imagine
if
that.
I free all.
For today, in these last days of time.
If I rule the world,
if I rule,
I free all my diamonds.
I love them, baby.
Black diamonds above.
If I rule,
if I rule the world, if I rule the world.